Tommy McNeil. U.S. Vice President Mike Pence said Thursday that he was encouraged that Mexican officials are willing to do more to curb migration flows to the United States, but it was up to President Trump to decide if they went far enough to avert threatened tariffs. Mr. Pence told reporters in York, Pennsylvania, that Mr. Trump wanted to see decisive action from Mexico and that the president would be the one to decide whether to impose tariffs on Mexican goods over the issue as of Monday.
This president has no higher priority than ending the crisis of illegal immigration that is flooding our southern border. People are being hurt on both sides of the border.
Mexico's Foreign Secretary Marcelo Ebrard said that he is optimistic the talks will succeed.
I am an optimistic man. That's why I am the Secretary of Foreign Relations of Mexico. Thank you very much.
Mr. Trump in Europe for D-Day commemorative events said if no agreement is reached, tariffs at the 5% level will begin on Monday. The African Union says it has suspended Sudan from all activities until a civilian-led government is formed. The AU Peace and Security Council announced the suspension Thursday as protest leaders in Sudan rejected an offer from the ruling military council to negotiate the country's political future. The protest leader said the call for talks is insincere following this week's deadly crackdown on demonstrators in Khartoum, which witnesses blamed on the militia known as the Rapid Support Forces. The United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, and Norway said Thursday that a preliminary investigation into a coordinated attack on four of their oil tankers in a port last month was likely carried out by a state actor. In a joint statement, they said that limpet mines were used in the May 12th coordinated attacks, which left large holes in the hulls of the four tankers, but did not cause more extensive damage or oil spills. This is VOA News. U.S. President Trump and French President Emmanuel Macron attended a ceremony Thursday at the American Military Cemetery in Normandy to mark the 75th anniversary of the D-Day. Following a bilateral meeting in the city, Henry Ridgewell has more.
U.S. President Donald Trump and French President Emmanuel Macron arrived here to sunlit skies. In the front row, the veterans were given repeated ovations. The French president spoke first.
We know what we owe to you, veterans, our freedom. On behalf of my nation, I just want to say thank you.
President Trump also spoke of the shared sacrifice.
Our cherished alliance was forged in the heat of battle, tested in the trials of war, and proven in the blessings of peace.
Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, Colville-sur-Mer, France.
While U.S. President Trump is in Europe to commemorate the 75th anniversary of D-Day, he took time Thursday to unleash new broadsides at political targets back at home for their roles in investigating him. That includes Special Counsel Robert Mueller and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Mr. Trump contended in a Fox News interview that Mueller made such a fool of himself last week when he delivered his first and only public statement on his 22-month investigation of Russian meddling in the 2016 U.S. presidential election and whether Trump, as president, obstructed justice by trying to thwart it. President Trump may not like the trade numbers he's hearing from the Commerce Department, AP correspondent Ben Thomas.
The Commerce Department says the gap between what the U.S. buys overseas and what it sells dropped to $50.8 billion in April, 2.1% lower than in March. The deficit with China, however, rose close to 30% as exports dropped and Chinese imports climbed. While President Trump has sought to reduce the trade deficit, seeing it as a sign of economic weakness, mainstream economists say the gap is the product of one enduring economic factor. Americans buy more than they produce, and imports fill the gap. Ben Thomas, Washington.
And two Reuters reports say that the United States has decided to stop accepting any additional Turkish pilots to train in the United States on F-35 fighter jets. That's according to U.S. officials. And in a separate report, a U.K. opposition Labour Party is retaining a seat in Parliament in the by-election, beating Nigel Farage's Brexit Party. Find more at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Friday, June 7th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Malawi's president accuses the main opposition leader of trying to overthrow his government by force.
The real goal of Imre Chakwera is to ignore the democratic electoral process and its results, to create chaos, to take over government by violence and force. This will not be allowed.
Malawian President Peter Mutharika addressing the nation Thursday. Malawi's Electoral Commission rejects demands for the resignation of its chairperson, Justice Jane Ansah. Uganda's president delivers his State of the Nation speech, promising economic and social development. And Zambia President Edgar Lungu's press secretary resigns.
I'm resigning because there's a prospect for a career in politics, but I wouldn't be successful if I didn't leave now, because there is a constitutional amendment that you can only qualify to stand if you left 2 years ahead of election.
Zambian Presidential Press Secretary Amos Chanda and Rwanda says over 6,000 people who perpetrated the 1994 genocide have still not been brought to justice. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley's post, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Malawian President Peter Mutharika has accused his main rival in the May 21st presidential election of trying to overthrow his government by force. Lazarus Chakwera of the Malawi Congress Party, who came second in the election, has rejected the results, saying they were rigged. On Tuesday this week, thousands of Chakwera supporters marched through the city and burst into government offices. In a nationwide televised speech on Thursday, President Mutharika accused Chakwera of inciting violence and a bloodbath to plunge Malawi into chaos and then overthrow the government by force.
The real goal of Imre Chakwera is to ignore the democratic electoral process and its results, to create chaos and civil unrest, using lives of unsuspecting innocent Malawians to take over government by violence and force. This will not be allowed. I would like to urge all Malawians to reject anyone wanting to use your life as a pawn for power-hungry politicians. Let me call upon all you fellow Malawians to maintain peace, love, and unity at all times, and reject leaders who terrorize and threaten the lives of our families and children. Let us reject Raymond Chakwera's lawlessness by maintaining our respect for our judges, who are country of laws, and judges are custodians of law. We must allow them to do their job without influence or hindrance. I call upon all other political leaders to avoid inciting their followers to violence and anarchy. We must reject uniting in strongest terms and protect our democracy from return to the dark era of Malawi Congress Party dictatorship and brutality. I also appeal to all traditional leaders, civil society organizations, and religious leaders to join my government and all peace-loving Malawians in rejecting the spirit of violence and anarchy displayed by Raymond Chakwera and the Malawi Congress Party.
That was Malawian President Peter Mutharika addressing the nation on Thursday. A spokesman for Malawian President Peter Mutharika says Lazarus Chakwera of the opposition Malawi Congress Party is trying to circumvent the democratic process by taking power by force. But presidential spokesman Ungeme Nkalilani says Malawi is a country of laws and will not allow Mr. Chakwera to usurp the will of the people by seizing power by force.
The president has sent a warning to the leader of the opposition, Malawi Congress Party, as you've rightly observed, Dr. Lazarus Chakwera, that as the leader of the country and the head of government, he is aware that Dr. Lazarus Chakwera is trying to take over power by way of violence. He is trying to circumvent the democratic processes, having lost the election, so that he can assume power through the back door. And the president said this is not going to be allowed. We are a country with laws. We have a constitutional government in place. Malawians have just voted. And His Excellency the President, Professor Peter Mutharika, will not allow Dr. Lazarus Chakwera to usurp the will of the people of Malawi through violence. The president said it categorically that that is not going to be allowed.
As you know, the Malawian security forces, according to information we got, fired on the headquarters of the Malawi Congress Party on Thursday. What was the purpose of that?
Well, the opposition supporters under the leadership of Dr. Chakwera have been causing mayhem in the city center, the capital of Malawi, Lilongwe, where their headquarters are located. And their point of mobilization and execution of their plans has been their headquarters. So I would guess that the purpose of the security forces to throw in tear gas into the compound was to disperse them because they were mobilizing illegally for the continuation of what they have been doing for the past 3 days or so.
Are you concerned that Malawi might go the way of Zambia? Since the Zambian election, there's been this up and down between the opposition leader and the president. Are you concerned that Malawi might turn out to be that way?
Yes, we are concerned at the current situation, but we're quite optimistic that reasonableness will prevail and we'll be back to business in a few days' time.
Ngemi Kalilani is the spokesperson for Malawi President Peter Mutharika. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lilongwe. The Malawi Electoral Commission has rejected demands for the resignation of its chairperson, Justice Jane Ansah. The decision came after the Human Rights Defenders Coalition issued a 2-week ultimatum demanding the resignation of Justice Ansah because the group says she failed to administer free, fair, and credible election during the May 21st election. The group also said Malawians have lost confidence in Justice Ansah's ability to organize credible future election, but Ansah's supporters say the political parties were part of the electoral process to ensure transparency and cannot blame the chairperson. Gift Trapens is vice president of the Human Rights Defenders Coalition.
It's true that we have written a letter calling for her resignation on the basis that she has presided over a fraudulent election. And there were so many irregularities and complaints where, as a commission, she failed to manage that process to the satisfactory of the electorate. So for us, it's an issue of trust. Malawians have lost trust in her leadership. So it is important for her to pave way for people who can manage our elections better. And that is why we have given her 14 days to resign.
But some supporters of the electoral commissioner are saying that it is high time your organization stop behaving as if you are the self-appointed authority for public office. Is this how your organization is behaving in Malawi?
I think that's not true, because for us, those leaders are appointed leaders on trust, and they use public tax. We are also taxpayers. So if we have a public officer who is not behaving in line with our laws, in line with what we have trusted in those offices, I think we have to demand. So we are demanding as citizens of this country. And it's not only HRIBC who is demanding. In all Malawian walks of life, are also demanding for her resignation because she has failed to manage the election. That's a straightforward issue.
So what legal recourse do you have to force this demand for her resignation effective immediately?
I think for us, if she can't do resignation within the 40 days that we have given her, we are going to mobilize Malawi. We are going to have our own demonstration to make sure that we force her to resign honorably.
But how can you do that when the Constitution gives the president the power to appoint the chairperson of the Electoral Commission? So how can you force her to resign when you don't have that appointing authority per the Constitution stipulation?
The issue, what we are saying, is very, because she has failed her duties. She has failed in that office. So she has also conflict of interest. The president appointed her, but you can also see the way how she behaved when they announced the result. She went and celebrated with the ruling party. So for us, we are seeing her in that position having a conflict of interest. And that is why we are just asking her to resign or the president to fire the person. That's a very simple ask that we are asking. Let the president appoint a professional person who can manage our electoral processes in a good way so that everyone is satisfied.
Gift Trapens is the vice president of the Human Rights Defenders Coalition. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the Malawian capital, Lilongwe. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Friday, June 7th. Daybreak Africa time, 15 minutes past the hour. Ugandan President Yoweri Kaguta Museveni says his government will continue to work towards the socio-economic development of the country. His State of the Nation address on Thursday, President Museveni also said his government is committed towards ensuring peace in the country. Mugumi Davis Rakaringi reports from Kampala.
In a more than 3 hour State of the Nation address, President Museveni said Uganda's economy is well on the right track. He said for the past 3 decades, Uganda's economy grew at an average rate of 6.9%, whereas per capita income grew at an annual average rate of 3.6%. He said his government will invest in tourism and agriculture to boost the economy.
If we can increase production per hectare of coffee, as an example, from the current 0.67 tons per hectare to 2.2 tons per hectare like in Brazil and Vietnam, Uganda would be earning about $2 billion from unprocessed coffee alone, if we export it unprocessed. And if this coffee was roasted here, roasting alone, Uganda would fetch $6.7 billion from coffee alone.
Agriculture sector contributes 25% of national GDP and employs over 70% of Uganda's population. The size of Uganda's economy is 109 trillion Uganda shillings, or about $29.5 billion. Mr. Museveni said he has identified generation of power as one way to accelerate development.
Government has completed pre-feasibility studies for a 2,000 megawatt nuclear power project following the identification of 8 potential sites for nuclear power plants, because all these dams which we are going to build on the Nile, Ayago, Uhuru, Kiba, Orion, they may end up with about 10,000 megawatts.
He said nuclear energy will help boost agriculture and industrialization. President Museveni said he has instructed his officers to help deal with environmental challenges.
In ignorance, some of our people have been destroying the wetlands and forests. Hence, the erratic rains like the ones we saw recently. This must be stopped, and it is easy to stop. People in the wetlands and the encroaching on the lake shores, river banks, etc., should peacefully leave these bodies, and we help them. And we help them with alternative livelihood.
He also said his government will improve health and education sectors and fight corruption. Mr. Museveni, one of the lead statesmen in Africa, said he's working with other African leaders to forge unity of Africa.
The political economic integration of Africa is about 3 things. Prosperity through trade in the common market. Strategic security through political integration where possible. And exploiting the fraternity linguistically, culturally, and the linkages among the 4 nations of Africa.
He said members of the East African Community, or EAC, have set up a committee of legal experts to draft the constitution aimed at EAC federation. President Museveni did not comment on the relations with neighbors Rwanda that have stalled since the beginning of this year. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
The Rwandan government says more than 6,000 Burundian nationals who allegedly perpetrated the 1994 genocide against the Tutsis have yet to be brought to justice because of tension between Rwanda and Burundi. Yuji Uwimana has details from Kigali.
These are some of the genocide survivors who claim that the perpetrators of the genocide have not been brought to book, even though they live next door in Burundi. We always urge our leaders to work with the Burundian government to bring to book Burundians who killed our people so that our hearts can be relieved. Jean Bosco Mutangana, the prosecutor general, says the next click would be bilateral cooperation, but he says the Burundian government has been dragging its feet to act. We have their lists, but unless they are caught by Interpol when they move from Burundi, because the Burundian government doesn't have any political will to help us. both Burundian police and prosecution have not any commitment in helping us to arrest them. For the International Residual Mechanism for International Criminal Tribunals, Serge Bremert says the United Nations needs to step in to fix the issue. He told reporters during a press conference earlier Thursday that there is an impediment to the delivery of justice after 25 years.
And how difficult it remains to convince some countries, also in the region, to help us arresting fugitives allegedly on their territory. I have always difficulties understanding why individuals or services would protect people who are allegedly responsible for genocide.
Rwanda-Burundi tensions have added to the delay in administering justice for genocide survivors. The tensions began in 2015 when many Burundians sought refuge in Rwanda after President Pierre Nkurunziza's decision to seek a third term. Since then, Bujumbura has been accusing Kigali of working with refugees to destabilize Nkurunziza's regime. According to Rwanda prosecution statistics, half of nearly 1,000 fugitives indicted by the Rwanda since 1994 genocide live in neighboring countries. Eugene Wimana for VOA News, Kigali.
Zambian presidential spokesman Amos Chanda has resigned. He says his resignation is in fulfillment of a provision in the country's draft constitution requiring civil servants to vacate their positions at least 2 years ahead of elections. Chanda says he wants to satisfy that requirement should he decide to run for political office.
I'm resigning because, of course, I've been in the job for a long time and I would want to do something else to help the president in any other capacity other than this, and also just to have a breath of fresh air in a different environment. But essentially, there is a prospect, as I said in the second paragraph, that there is a prospect for a career in politics, but I wouldn't be successful if I didn't leave now, because there is a constitutional amendment that is being pushed that if you are a civil servant, you can only qualify to stand if you left 2 years ahead of elections.
So do you intend to run for president? Do you intend to run for parliament? What is it that's making you to leave 2 years ahead?
That's a requirement. If you want to run for the office of member of parliament, then you've got to leave 2 years ahead of time.
As you said, Amos, you've been in Zambian politics for a while now, first as a journalist, then now as a politician. Now, what's your reflection as you get ready to leave?
My reflection is that the president requires a lot of support, and he requires the support of all of us at the technical level, ministerial level, and with the challenges of the economic times, allegations of corruption, allegations of inefficiency in the allocation of resources, the president has to be given the full support in terms of information on what the people want on the ground.
How does President Lungu feel that you are leaving? I mean, did he endorse your decision?
He said to me he was reluctantly accepting my decision to leave, and he appreciates the fact that he and I reached an amicable decision to separate, but he does wish that I support him in whatever manner I can to support his administration to deliver a mandate for the remaining 2.5 years before he faces the general election again in 2021.
What advice do you have for other press secretaries?
What they must do is, in good or bad times, the news media always want information. No matter how bad it is, people must be able to respond and give the information that the newspapers, what the radio stations, television stations want. No matter how difficult the situation is, news media will require that information, because if you do not give that information, there will be a vacuum that will be created, and that vacuum will be filled by rumor mongering. The advent of social media does create a situation where falsehoods rather than the truth will be occupying that space.
Amos Chanda is the now former spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. 25 minutes past the hour, time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with a story that the Confederation of African Football President Ahmed Ahmed was arrested and questioned by French authorities in Paris on Thursday morning. Among the allegations are claims that Ahmed Ahmed forced CAF to buy sportswear through a French company rather than directly from manufacturers at an inflated prices. Former CAF General Secretary Amir Fahmy had disclosed that the African football chief had instructed him to pay $20,000 in bribes into accounts of African Football Association presidents in the past. The purported arrest and questioning of the CAF president is eliciting some reactions from some football fans on the continent.
If he is liable in any form of corruption, any of the dealings he undertook for CAF, then he should face the music.
For the French police to be involved, I think there is definitely a case he has to answer.
We stay with CAF and the Confederation of African Football, where it has ordered a replay of the second leg of the African Champions League final between Esperance of Tunisia and Wydad Casablanca of Morocco after the match was abandoned due to a disputed decision in favor of Esperance. The CAF's executive committee meeting in Paris on the fringes of the FIFA Congress decided to order for a replay on a neutral ground, a decision that could spark an immediate legal challenge. Wydad Casablanca refused to play on after having a 59th minute effort disallowed in the return leg of the final in Tunis last week Friday. The video assistant referee system was not working after a delay of almost 2 hours. The match was then awarded to the home side Esperance, who were handed a trophy and winners' medals. I spoke with some fans who expressed concerns on the decision by CAF to ask for a replay of the final.
Sincerely, I'll say it's a disgrace, it's a sham, and it's not what Africa would have wanted the whole world to see. On such a day where we had, the quality of play was fantastic, good football, beautiful. So we expected that decisions like that, that would probably cause confusion, would be dealt with prior to such. If there was no VAR, the team should have been told that there was no VAR.
It's a bad advertisement for African football. And of course, for the finals, rather than have two-legged finals, why don't you just have one? It's fine that way. That's how it's played in Europe.
It's time for CAF to look into the fact that they play the competition in a neutral venue. Now, it saves CAF a lot of things. Now, I'm not saying it's going to solve the VAR issue, because you can play in a neutral venue and VAR might still malfunction. But what it saves CAF is that it spreads this whole North African dominance. It spreads the CAF championship throughout the continent.
And now to the Women's World Cup. The 8th edition of the Women's World Cup kicks off in Paris later today, with host nation France playing South Korea in the tournament's opener. Three African nations are contesting in this year's FIFA Women's World Cup. They are Nigeria, South Africa, and Cameroon. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Malawian President Peter Mutharika has accused his main rival in the May 21st presidential election of trying to overthrow his government by force. In a nationwide televised speech Thursday, President Mutharika accused Lazarus Chakwera of inciting violence and bloodbath to overthrow the government by force. That is it for this Friday, June 7th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post-editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Butt in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
Sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.